members, members, our esteemed presenters from the Department of Front and Tax, and Dr. Nobelino from the good morning. May we start the week after a visit which led to the experience in our first very violent experience in our new democracy, and there has been a loss of many lives, both from the security forces and from the miners, and we would like to express our deepest condolences to the families of the police and to the families of those who have lost their lives. This looks like an industrial dispute, but it may not be as simple as that. It may not have only local players, it may not have global stakeholders involved as well. So we don't know which are going for the judicial commission that is established by the president. From that third note, fellow countrymen, you've got to move on, take the lessons of last week, and use the experiences to be a better and a stronger nation tomorrow, to be better negotiators tomorrow, to be better reconciliators tomorrow, but to be more vigilant as well, because what we see may not what actually is the case. It may be far deeper than what we think. And as we move on, we have lost the president of Ethiopia, as we are exploring a new chairman of the AU in the same country. It is an irony of history, but Africa is exciting. Exciting as it is, let us make it stronger. And our son and daughter of Africa, both great and mine. Those words are not much ago, because we are going to have service at 12 o'clock. Let us move on to our presenters, that is Mr. Glenfield and Dr. Nobelino from the RS. They have very organized.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Hello, committee members. Pleasure for Sam Hoff to be here this morning to present to you. I have incorporated, as far as I could best understand, a request in terms of the brief we received into the presentation. Essentially what I'm going to go through is our next 10-year strategy. We have just got our previous 10-year strategy has culminated. We need to review that. We have now, recently, in fact, this last week presented our new strategy to our board as well. And just to give you a heads up on that process. Recently, in fact, in the end of last financial year, the financial park reviewed its vision. The new vision that faces up there is South African National Park connecting to society. I think one of our key issues we face, and you'll see in the presentation, is eventually that our first base is representative of the demographic of the country. Therefore, we get support of the nation. Our mission is to develop, manage, and promote a system of national parks that represents the biodiversity and heritage assets, applying best practice, environmental justice, benefit sharing, and sustainable use. I'm going to present to you now the highlights of our responsible tourism strategy. What we've done is we've reviewed where we are in terms of South African National Park as a destination, as a very valuable destination of the country. And as can be 18 from this model, the Parker model, basically gives an indication as to where the trajectory that a tourism destination or tourism product takes. We believe that Tampax, since the early 1920s, went through various stages. We've got to the stage now where we've got all the product, a broad range of products, but we also require a critical range of elements and capacity to ensure we remain sustainable. So we've had a view of where we are. We've decided that if we remain the same, we'll probably go into stagnation phase, or we'll divide. And we believe that we need new tourism model to take us into the future that looks at what the industry, the broader population and the industry requires of us. Just taking it back a bit, in 2001, McKinsey Consulting came and did some work with South African National Park at a time where South African National Park was actually bankrupt. There was not enough funds to pay salaries at that point, and some drastic changes had to take place. And they looked at two key areas, so opportunities and a market, and marketing opportunities. From a pricing perspective, these were the aspects we concentrated on. We were looking at different pricing opportunities, where we had gaps in the market or products that we could attract a different price. Introducing differential pricing on our conservation fees, so that meant that locals paid less than foreign visitors to the country on the conservation fees. We re-looked at our accommodation fees and our conservation fees in terms of what we were charging per park and what the park offered in terms of value. We also brought in a daily conservation fee, a per diem pricing strategy. Historically, you pay once off, you enter the park, you stay for a month, but you pay a fee. And that was changed back then. We also looked at the reservations and property management system. We had a very archaic system in place, and in some cases, manual system. So we needed to implement something that was electronic and save the park. And we also needed to concentrate on the business conference market as an opportunity. We also then looked at our product and market opportunities, and we realized that shops and restaurants were not a core activity of the National Park. Those were then outsourced. We also increased our activity sales and focused on growing our activities and our experiences. And we also entered into the lodge concession market, and we put out a broad range of lodge or concession opportunities into the marketplace. Between 2002 and 2012, we've grown our business up to about 4.7 million per annum. On that graph, you can see the bottom line is coming through Sandpark Gates. And then if we add on the cableway, which we eventually start working very closely with, we get a high volume up Table Mountain. It takes you up to the 4.7 million visitors in our national parks every year, as an average now. In terms of Kruger, being our flagship park in terms of volume, we get 1.4 million visitors a year. You can see growth over this period of time, and continue to grow all the way through. In terms of our occupancy, we grew very well since 2004, and that was a large move due to better management of our property, as well as a new reservations and property management system, which allowed us to have real-time view of what was available and what was ready for sale and what was on maintenance. So our occupancy grew steadily until 2010, which is peak. And like the rest of the industry, I think the World Cup helped us to push the away a bit. We started feeding Finch and our occupancies and room life sales started hopping off in 2010. But we're still operating way ahead of the industry norms at the moment, which are in the upper 40. And we're operating at just below 70% occupancy at the moment. Kruger operates at a 76% occupancy annually. It got up to 79% of the pandemic height in 2010, and then of course dropping off and leveling out as well. In terms of the PwC, they forecasted that we will start returning to our 2008-9 occupancy by 2014. So we are seeing that we will probably start growing again out of the recessionary period, although there are various views on that at the moment. Currently, we generate from our accommodation revenue 350 million rand. That was a lot financial year, 350 million rand of accommodation. And you can see the two lines, the one being the accommodation income actual, and then that linked with inflation. We try in terms of our pricing structure to track inflation and CPI, so we're not out of kilter with that. In terms of activities, we now generate about 55 million rand a year out of our activity grant, but we still feel there's a tremendous opportunity for activity in our national park. In terms of wild card, we, as you know, in 2010, we ended up having to take the wild card act from our outdoor partner, Infinity, who was under incubation. And since then, our revenues have, if you look at the revenues 2009-10 and 2011 up to 2011-12, significant growth in our revenue there since we took back, and we're not paying those commissions over to the third party. We currently have 80,000 wild card holders up there at the moment, so we're back at the levels of where we actually took over the project from them. Revenue from concessions also had steady growth. Again, that started being the session 2009-10 already, and the large industry generally is experiencing very difficult time at the point in time, being that it's a niche market up top end, and one of the areas that requires longer travel from the markets that they market to, so they have felt the pinch a lot sooner than we did. The National Park Board adopted the minimum standards of responsible tourism as a policy for South African National Park in October 2011. So we will be, as we roll out each new park management plan, each park will have to demonstrate how they're going to meet the minimum standards of responsible tourism in that specific park on an annual basis. So our key achievements over the last 10 years were introduced the new conservation fee structure, the Wildcard Active and Loyalty Program, and domestic markets make it cheaper and more affordable. Our room seeker reservations and property management system, which is enabling us to really understand our business and to build our product better. Our real-time web reservations, we've implemented on that system as well. We get tremendous feedback on that system where people can book with their credit card directly, and about 20% of our business is now coming directly to us and to our third party. Web-based customer feedback system that allows customers to email them when they call. About 50% of our customers get an email, and we get about a 30% return rate on that, 33% return rate, where they get web-based feedback, which I'll show you some of the feedback, where they tell us what they like and what they don't like, so they hold us to focus on the areas where we have a main weakness. We also are seen now as a leader in public-private partnerships and how we've managed our conditions and help them through difficult times with being firm in not changing material aspects of contracts due to possible management failure or decisions made by the concession holder. The government should not be held responsible for poor decision-making by concession aid. We've also implemented a tourism standards and audit mechanism in line with the Tourism Grading Council. So we have to audit our facilities. We have two permanent auditors who audit our standards and report on what has been changed and what has been improved. So what are our challenges for the next 10 years? Firstly, tourism revenue generation. Currently, if we take the last 5 years and take that trend in the next 10 years, we'll generate about 800 million rand in tourism income. If we take our costs over the last 5 years and how they escalated, our costs will take us up to about 1.2 billion rand. So we'll have a major gap in terms of our revenue, operating costs, if we do not either get more support in terms of government grants or generate more revenue out of new products and diverting our product offering. Cost of operations is a key issue. To a large degree, due to the location of our facility, it costs us to get goods there, goods and services there. So we need to manage that very closely. We've got to make sure that we enhance our profitability or our surplus, as we call it, of our tourism plant, and that's again by managing both yield out of our facility so we don't have room or maintenance during peak periods when there's a demand, and at the same time manage our costs very closely through our supply chain process. Maintenance and innovation is a main challenge for us as well. We are far from the requirement, the budget requirement to keep maintaining our facilities as good as they should be. Human resources and training is an ongoing issue to enhance our service delivery, and of course customer service being a key focus area in the next 10 years. If you look at our feedback from our customer feedback mechanism, those are the key indicators. The first box section of ours is Sam Parker Hall. The last dropped slightly by 0.2% in the last financial year in terms of overall sandbox facilities. And the other ones give a breakdown of each region as to where the performance in terms of customer feedback. As you can see, the trade generates a not significant 86% South Africa grade. And the northern region has grown nicely, up to 81.6%. Our target is 80% across the board as an average, as for customer satisfaction index that we are striving to achieve that. In terms of key areas of focus, reservations has improved. Our reservation process and service generally is over at 85%. Gate active, these are all the key customer touch points. Gate active, 81.4% last year. Reception, which was a key challenge historically, is growing last year through training interventions. Accommodation, mainly around maintenance, that's only 9%. And then shopping and dining being our two challenge areas, which are incidentally outdoor for our operators. Shopping, the main challenge around that has been the perception of pricing. And we're trying to deal that in new tender that's out at the moment. Try and tie down to a basket of goods that are the key issues the customers are looking for, value for money. And then dining is purely about service delivery. And the current tenders out there now is also trying to enhance the service delivery from third party operators. And then, of course, activities operate at 1% in terms of customer feedback. The key areas of these are now comments, actual comments from customers. Let's say that we want to see comments off. The shop at 14% negative. Of all the comments over that financial year, 14% were negative, 2% were positive. When we analyze that in depth, we turn out to pricing being the key issue. In terms of restaurants, 16% and 6%, the key issue there was service and value for money. And we're dealing with, as I said, the tender now. Reservations, overwhelming positive change now in terms of reservations, positive comments. Perception, also better comments, more positive than negative. Public airing grounds, very small percentage, but that's the key challenge. A lot of people expect lawns that are watered. Our concept has changed not to have unnatural lawns, rather less natural bush in our camp. So that's been a bit of a change we're going to try and deal with. The communal kitchens and law enforcement being the key issues. Law enforcement really around speeding and people disobeying the rules of the park. Customers complaining about that. And then camping caravan evolutions, a key issue to tackle there. And that's again around the cleaners and maintenance of those facilities. Activities, generally positive, other safe comments. Accommodation, 28% more negative comments and 17% positive. And the 28% would be really up to focus. And again, if we drill down to that, come down to maintenance of the facilities and the campus around that. And that's what we're focusing on now. And then gate access now has been improved around there. So we are in the right direction now from where we were, but there's still a lot of work. This is a key challenge for us. Currently, whilst we haven't seen growth from 2% of overnight black visitors in 2001, we've gone up to 8.6% of our overnight visitors are black and 29.7%, up from 14% in 2001. So there's still significant focus in this area, and this is one of our key focus areas for the next 10 years, is to grow this asset because we need from the broader population of the country. For the next 10 years, we are informed on natural tourism strategy. Everything we've included into our strategy was informed by our part of that working group in terms of the tourism strategy, so we try to pull that into our strategy. So we want to connect to broad society, we want to diversify products and experiential offerings through broadening the activity experience aspect. Become not to be seen as a big five destination, there's a lot more than that. Differentiate parks on the natural and cultural attributes and then attach activity to those attributes and become more sales focused. Historically, national parks has been we'll wait for someone to phone up and then take the reservation. We don't go out and get business. We've got to change that. We also want to look at expanding our commercial operations beyond sandbox. So there's a host of brand and merchandising opportunities using the power of our brand to leverage revenue, offering activity experiences on the periphery of our parks, where we work with local communities, land owned by local communities, we can place products that would not normally be in a national park, a lot of periphery for customers to make use of. We get ecosystem services as an opportunity. Operating tourism products outside national parks is also an opportunity which we need to investigate. Offering consulting services. Currently, our public-private partnership unit and our scientific and our environmental management team are highly regarded, and we often consult locally and internationally. We don't have a service, and we're considering charging for that service. And then hosting other related tourism brands. on our reservation system for commission, because our reservation system is stable and working very well. So the next step is to actually go to each park and identify those opportunities. And we have a list of over 600 different types of potential access points that we need to have a look at, where it suits the park, it fits within the zoning of the park, and fits within the plan of the park. And then look at where we can generate more opportunities and revenue from those. We have very specific guiding principles and values when we do this. Firstly, we want to offer nature-based responsible tourism and multi-value for money. We want to build a broad-based competency for conservation and involve people in conservation. We want to use tourism as a financial driver without eroding our conservation value. So that's going to be a key driver throughout all these processes. Offer customer-focused excellence. Offer a broad range of price and services with a range of prices. And I think you need to really see with that, and I'll show you on another slide now in terms of why we've managed to maintain our occupancy and what we have. Apply yield management for high demand products so we don't lose revenue during peak periods. And offer equitable access so that we can offer options for everybody in the country at a certain time to be able to enter their natural heritage. If you look at our products, we offer prices ranging from a minimum of 70 rand per person for camping, all the way to the most expensive concession lodge, which is 24,500 rand a night, which is in Gita, or Example Road. And those are our concessions, of course. But we have a broad range of products. We want to grow budget demand, which currently is only 7.3% on our product offering, and we want to grow that significantly because we believe there's an opportunity in that area and to broaden the opportunity for visitors that need that price range. But I think we've been very lucky because during this recessionary period, people have been able to trade up and down according to their wallet, that is what the price allows. So where those people used to, somebody used to go to concession lodges, 5-star full service, they've now gone to a sandbox self-catering guest house because our price range allows them to do that. And I think that's been one of our successful aspects in terms of the recession. Our pricing, it was one of the questions, how do we determine our pricing? We over the last few years have been trying to align our pricing to the forecast of CPI. So if you look at it, since 2007, it was a bit erratic in terms of price increases of bar, it ends up, and the other line is the line that inflation took. And you can see then the inflation rose significantly in July, way beyond our rate. In July 2008, we then brought a correction in September 2009 to make up the shortfall. That was a big growth there. And then we slowly tried to bring the rate in line with CPI, and the next increase is 6.2% that is coming in November 2012 to try and bring us close to CPI. We want to keep in mind that our price increases on tourism are not just to fund the tourism aspect, we also have to fund conservation on that tourism as well. Currently about 50% of our revenue that comes in is passed directly off the cost over to conservation management. And so there's a 50% surplus out of tourism at the moment. Essentially to support what we do, we will of course still have to manage tourism density to enhance experiences. We've got to offer real benefits to visitors around the park, not just the normal curio selling that we've seen around our park, actual real benefits, and hence trying to expand our activities into those community areas. And that tourism opportunity framework will help us do this. We want to have a healthy human resource and governance and business principle in place, and I think we've been very lucky with that. Our ratings, apply the rating system for responsible tourism into our visit model, so we can be a leader in that area. And then we have a strategic chart park in terms of tourism division to implement this. The research division is to bring in the specific research development element, implement the responsible tourism standards, reduce the cost of operations, grow tourism revenue, infrastructure development maintenance ongoing, drive ourselves in marketing in a far greater manner, evidence supported through sound tourism research, and at the end of the day, improve visitor service experience. In terms of transformation, was our question mark, this is the breakdown of our current up until the end of last month, in terms of our split, on the left-hand side is the band of each of grains, A and B band, of course, being part of the bargaining unit, and then the other level of management all the way up. Male, female, and then social on the edge of the demographic, down at the bottom. And then divisional breakdown, as you can see, in terms of our permanent and non-permanent breakdown of staff, and which divisions they're falling. So conservation still has the majority of people, of course, in our core business, then tourism, then the technical service components, then human resources and finance. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bila. And then I do not know whether you there is an impact on government in terms of the increased activity in rhino poaching. When we were in India, there were different dynamics presented by the poaching of tigers there. And rhino as I saw a program dealing with the effects and the difficulties in managing that situation that requires resources and capacities over and above the normal resources and capacities that you require. And if you could perhaps remark on that as part of responding to questions. And now, South Africa's strength is its affordability as a destination, and it has been branded as an affordable and a responsible, sustainable destination. So. And I see that now the vision is connecting to society as well as the agriculture of South Africa for 2010. And without much ado, I did those remarks. Let me allow Mr. Farrow and then Mr.
For bringing us up to speed. Partly the reason I hope that you asked to come here was to try and give us some sort of explanations on our oversight visits where we were seeing a little bit of conflict with concessions that had to be renewed in land and resources that were handed back to you for your responsibilities, I assume by the state free of charge. I don't think there was cost associated, which resulted in a lot of those concessions being subjected to a certain amount of sustainability constraints, let me put it that way, because they were operating and providing a very good tourist service, for instance, in these sort of concession areas, and all of a sudden, when Sandpark took over those particular areas, there was a marked increase, sometimes to the extent of 150%. Now, these reports that came to us, I mean it a lot, because here we tried to push the tourism initiative, and if we take the Cape Point issue in particular, in my previous capacity in transport, there was an outcry, like you can't believe, relating to the entry into those parks where previously couriers were able to take busloads in, were now being told to count their heads and stop increasing the price on that particular ratio as opposed to a vehicle. So these concerns were sort of, escalated. And the answers we sort of got was, oh, look at Treasury regulations, we comply. And my question is to you, that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the assets of the park are national assets, which belong to all the citizens of this country. And the accessibility and affordability to those things should be seen to be prime in your particular strategies going forward, not to make money out of it, and to have two-tier system where both tourists and domestic tourists have to pay different rates because of the value of the rand. But I would certainly believe that somewhere along the line, your deficit between your revenue of 800 million projected and the 1.2 billion should be rationalized in a sense by virtue of some state subsidization. Now, whether that is happening or whether you guys are going off on a tangent saying we're going to become self-sustainable ourselves and we're going to have to now maintain ourselves, because my firm belief is that as far as the conservation portion of your particular money that you plow back into that rock, and I think the chair raised the issue of the rhino and its, you know, endangering aspects of Tokyo, that and the protection of that and conservation of their natural resources and heritage should be the role of government. Now, I could be wrong, but that's how I understand it, and I think a lot of our members understand that. And if we're going to succeed in ensuring and attracting and improving the number of people in your accommodation, then it's got to be seen to be fair value. Now, it might be fair value for someone coming in with a pound at 21, but it might not also be fair value. And I'm very perturbed, and it actually brings home to me the big issue, is that we, as a South African, are creating a domain which primarily now is driven by affordability, in the sense that only 2.7 black South Africans have actually visited our homes. It's shocking. Shocking. So I believe they should be an affordable destination for all people, at whatever level. So those are my concerns to you. I think that we need to get some more information about the rhino and some solutions to actually see how we can protect those in our parks, because they even get poached in Kruger Park. And that we should be able to put on the table some suggestions there. There has been a lot of sort of points put forward about a levy at entry into our airport to go towards and contribute towards that effort. And, you know, it could be a thing, because we sell a package of the big five. And if we don't have a, we only got four of the five, you know, we're going to lose out to other parts. And I think that it's very important that we try to get that thing unpacked a bit, and so we know where and what you're doing about that. In particular, what you're going to do about the increased costs, where people now have to go into the market to tender for new concessions, where they have invested millions, and we saw it. We went to the Eastern Cape recently, in infrastructure, which they could lose as a result of a tender, which could come in and take away that particular operation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to seek clarity before I ask the question on the, under the section of overall comments in with regard to customer or client satisfaction. You say you have the negative tag, positive tag. Which is the negative? Negative is we've got it in black and white. Is a negative, for example, shop, negative 14% and positive 2%. Is that how it is?
Is that a color or not?
That comes first. Is it negative first and positive second, as I read it? Okay, then I can ask the question. sometimes during the presentation, well, let me thank for the presentation first. You said that restaurant and shop stuff like that could have been outsourced. My question would be, one would expect an improvement in service. The purpose of outsourcing is, hey, we can't run this thing. Let outsource it, it'll be run as a professional business. But it doesn't seem to have the desired effect. The question is why? If you've outsourced it, who received it? For example, who owns that massive shop or supermarket in the Kruger Park that we saw? Who owns it? The impression I got there was that it was being managed by the person who was in charge of the park. If it is outsourced, does he own the park? Does he have a stake in the business? I want to know. The second question is in respect of HR management and staffing issues. In that regard, A, the question would be, what mechanism do you have to address staff grievance? Do you have an effective grievance, a structure or proper process dealing with that? Because my visit to the park, I clandestinely had discussions with people. That's how I do it. Not in front of the bosses. You have huge issues there in respect of people who are perpetually temporary. Every year is being renewed. A person is there for 6 years, 7 years, and then he sees a young person come here from nowhere because he's connected to somebody he is appointed and he's promoted to. Not connected to. So, permanent contracts and put somebody on perpetual temporary contract. You wonder why is he temporary as a family to feed, and year in, year out he has to be renewed. You must look into the guards, is the issue of the guards in the party. Okay? They are living conditions. An issue of promotion in the Krugerhack, staffing issues. Right? So it's related to HR, but I'm focusing on what I saw and heard there. Then in this report, I don't see anything specific about porting figures. In fact, issues around marriage administration, disciplinary action, crime, fraud, obviously that nothing of this is happening there. Involvement of people, staff members in criminal activity with whatever is going on. We'd like to see something like that, and what measures have been taken to remedy that situation, what mitigating action has been taken to deal with it, because it doesn't say anything. It doesn't seem like anything wrong has happened. We want to know who did what and how you dealt with it. You remember they were saying that they probably might be forced to close down as a result of the letter. So can you please tell us what that all about? Why should such a wonderful project, which is actually sustaining the whole community, a school and a library, and so you saw it and we enjoyed ourselves. So we want to know, what are they saying? Is there any fact in what they say? Why are you exaggerating? Get us in peace. Thank you, Chief.
Permanent families, temporary talks. CEO does present a full report of that past the department of Martin's affairs who report to. So I think that's probably why I'll just present it on the report. That's all the report.
Okay.
The presentation. My apologies. In terms of the Rhino issue, I'm in charge of tourism, and obviously operate half other included in charge of also. And so it's we'll try to answer one that we've got another answer, we'll tell you to thank you. In terms of the Rhino project, it's of course a key part of your work. I am not involved in that advanced degree, other than aware of what the situation is and we get figures on what's happening. It is currently being managed through the department and the joint in terms of the response to this. Our ex-CEO, Mr. Mung, has been tasked now to get all the roles back together by the Department of Public Affairs. On this, but we certainly are making gains at the moment in terms of better reaction in terms of anti-poaching initiative. The department has funded an extra 100 rangers, which 15 departments have gone to their parking lot parade, and the rest are still training at the moment. There are major initiatives in there, and we do believe we'll win it, but it is something which is going to take time. I'm happy to get the CEO to supply a volunteer report on the Rhino. In terms of the value for money question, I think it's affordability. It is a key focus now. We realize we want a broad range of products. We're not just going 5-star, we're going 4-star like a hotel group that surely could do. We try to go from a low pricing of 70 rand per person up to where concessions through their own decisions of what they do are able to charge a far higher rate. Keep that in mind all the time, and hence we're trying to bring our increases down to as close to CPI as possible, taking into account all the cost increases around general operating costs. We've got to take into account 6%, 6.2% price increase coming in by annual, which I think is reasonable. If you look at our staffing, increase in our salary is beyond that amount. So we've got to make sure we cover that as well, being that we're a labour-intensive business. In terms of the
conflict with the concession is, I presume the one that's being talked about is the Tsukama Adventures, the Tsukama treetop canopy. That was a contract that was taken over by Sampos, as you read from forestry. It was a contract that had a termination date that has come to an end. And the way the contract was structured was on a build, operate, transfer model, same to all our concessions in the past. They have a set period in terms of to recoup their investment and make money. We would not want anything to stop operating. So we're trying to find ways to enable business to continue operating. There have been many of such aspects where we have, for example, Sengita put out when they tendered for their original operation, they put a very high tender, believing they're about to get a lot of people coming to the park. That never transpired because of various reasons. They had to put their tender back out on risk for another tender with a guaranteed minimum rental, and they managed to secure their tender again. So they had to go out on risk. So in terms of treasury regulations and the PFMA that we follow, the PFMA and the treasury regulations specifically around PPP, we are not allowed to change the length of term or the concession fee for those on material aspects of our contract. And irrespective of what happens, we can't change those. We'll look at any other ways we can help during tough times. So we'll give them payment holidays for a period of time during a tough situation to get through that difficult time. We can work marketing. For example, we pay for a voucher for all our concessions to market in. Wherever we go to market, we mark our concessions, not just our own product. We work very closely with them. In terms of the Tsukama Adventures, it's a legal issue where the operator is claiming that he has intellectual property rights for that operation. The legal advice around that is that the contract has ended, and hence we have to go to tender again according to Treasury regulations. But anybody who takes over, if he doesn't secure the tender again, all staff have to be through Division 197 transferred to a new operator. There will have to be an investment into the facility again to upgrade it. So we will not lose jobs and the operation will continue, but we would have to make sure that there's a proper process to enable other parties who may be better suited to operate that facility into the future. We have to go through that process. And that will happen with all our concessions at the end of their term. Currently, our retail tender is going out purely exactly for that reason. The contract coming to an end, and we have to ask to tender again for a further 10-year period of 10-year opportunity for the retail tender for our shops around the park. In terms of the core mandate and the revenue, absolutely correct, is we don't have enough money to operate. Currently, about 15% of our operational budget is funded by government. 85% is funded through our own revenue sources. The government government grants are not increasing, they're staying stagnant, so inflation is eating into them, and hence we've got supplements through other funding methods. However, government is funding through projects. So infrastructure development projects, the working for water, working on the coast, those projects money coming through. So we've got to try and move money around to make sure we still maintain what our core mandate is and fund that, but we'll see all these different revenue sources. So government focus on job creation through these projects, and that's when we're trying to benefit through those processes. Before I forget, the one issue, just getting back on terms of our affordability, the value for money. 80% of our business is domestic, I mean 20% is foreign. So 80% of our business are domestic businesses. The biggest issue for us is we want to maintain that. Definitely. We believe strongly that a strong domestic market is good for the country generally, and we support the government initiative in terms of the domestic marketing strategy that has been launched. At the same time, we want to make sure we then spread our demographics more equally, more equally in terms of who does business. And we've got various initiatives such as National Parks Week, there's one coming up in September now, where people are able to come to Parks Week during that week. We're paying the free to return to Parks right around the country. We have various kids in park programs where we bring kids into the park for free. We have various initiatives where we go out to communities from the park. Called the Kids in Park program, as well as the Community Green Schools Initiative, which goes to the school, as well as our Honorary Ranger Junior Range program that goes out as well to school. Those whole host of issues, but absolutely we want a strong ethnic market and it must be in the long term representative of the domestic demographic domestically. And at the same time, we're going to try and have that rate of price to allow everyone to experience the same natural heritage. So that is where we are trying to go. It ends our connecting to society. It means no matter what connection we create, it could be through web, it could be mobile, it could be a connectivity, it could be a lunch in the park. We've got to create all those different connections to allow people to experience the park. And that's what we're really going at the moment. In terms of the restaurants, Lizzie, do you want to add anything on that aspect?
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of the outsourcing of the shops, you asked who runs the shop. Tiger's Eye, which is part of Tour Bay, has a current contract. They also operate a lot of the airport shops, the major operations that they do. In terms of what they, in terms of service delivery, we have no complaints about this delivery. The key issue, as I mentioned, was price. And we recently did a survey. We've got about 900 responses from customers asking what exactly is the pricing issue. And to ask for a basket of goods, we need to actually control pricing on in the new tender. And things DA came like quite highly. Charcoal, baked salad, the key issues that a customer requires during the visit so that they felt would be outpriced because of a captive market. And in the contract, we're now trying to control that, and it's where we allow a certain markup that we will monitor on an annual basis or a monthly basis to ensure we bring restaurants, that aspect of restaurant complaints under control. But in terms of revenue generation, a risk to stamp off the restaurant is an absolute success. And we, in the shop, if we ran in four, we made a loss. So we're copying the setback. Since our store stamp off made lots of money out of the restaurant shop, but key is the delivery of service in the restaurant. In terms of the restaurants, we had the first contract that went out. The key issue was in the tender, the requirement for the technical partner was not high enough in the waiting. With the result that a company called Matata Chicken was the technical partner to deliver the service all restaurants, and they do not have the capacity. So we terminated that contract. We put the tender out again, and Compass Group, which is the biggest catering company in the world, Compass PLC, secured the contract. They still have not delivered. One of the key issues we believe is that, like any other restaurant business, if a successful business is when the owner is running it. So the success of restaurants in the country generally is through the franchise system. The owner buys the franchise, he puts his money down, and he's present. Or he doesn't manage, he really can trust. The current problem we have is any Tommy Harry's made a manager an inspector on a restaurant. Not the worst.
No.
Exactly. So the new tender is to secure exactly that. Owner-run franchise, because the franchise will give us the credibility, and the franchisor ensures the franchisee meets the standards continually, because their reputation is at stake. And hence we structure the new tender around that aspect. And then there's an HR system. I don't know if you want some information.
Thank you for the opportunity. I just want to respond to just the three questions that were highlighted that are more relevant to operations. I think firstly I just want to comment on the change of vision. The committee members will recall that after 1994, the organization had to go through a transformation visionary exercise that actually looked at a pride and joy of the national assets that we had to actually manage. As you will all recall, at the time, that the parks were actually managed in isolation, if you like. If you're talking about Suga, we had an exclusive members of the society that were not benefiting from the process. And yet the vision then was called the pride and joy of the world and the South Africans. And I think through our process of really deliberating on this issue and trying to focus our actions, the board and the CE actually said, what's the pride and joy? How do you really translate that into action? For instance, the park manager that is managing, let's say, Mountain Zebra or other national parks, how do I really make people, being proud of a national asset that way exclusively they never related to it? When we talk about a society doing a broad communities, within communities, and there has been always a tendency of conceptualizing the community as like the rural forum, you know. And yet we find that people that are working in parks, in particular, they will actually make those little Mickey Mouse kind of projects and they say, you know, I'm going to think I'm doing a run, or I'm doing sewing for women. So what we wanted to do was to actually connect the parks in a relevant way, such that the projects that we're dealing with are more conservation related. And yet, then we actually then say, we really need to focus. And I think we all deliberated, as Glenn had highlighted, to say, if I work in tourism, exactly what does it mean when I say I'm connected to society? Okay? If I'm in mountain working and there are issues of development that are talking about how do we align ourselves to the broader political agenda. And we are very lucky that even the legislation, NEMPA, was actually revised, which, by the way, is the one that is guiding us to generate income. And therefore, the connection to society is, we do it in various ways. I think one of the things that we also have to highlight, if you remember, national parks were created at the time for more managing the natural assets. The cultural aspects are really not something that we used to say we manage the associated cultural heritage aspect associated with those parks. But if you will know now, for instance, Mapungubwe National Park is one of our icons of the cultural heritage, which we are managing within the ambit of the national park. So I'm just trying to say these issues of transformation are broader than the numbers of women or the numbers of black people that are within the institution. And it's really deliberately trying to institutionalize the transformation practices of conservation. So we should be looking at broader than that. We will always have this discussion, and I think all of us know that conservation is a very labor-intensive exercise. And if we have rhino poaching in Kruger, definitely how you respond, you put more capacity. And what happens is that obviously the HR associated costs will have to be carried by somebody else. But as you will know, our budget, I think the CE, even our annual report, these are the challenges that are being highlighted. That over the years, even since 2001, when we had a crisis in issue, we had actually said we need to increase the we must actually have some income that is generated through the park system. And we are realizing now as we go on, that is not really the overall strategy that we have to do. We really have to work with the other people to actually create that balance. So the issues of tourism and conservation and creating that balance in terms of what we have to do on the ground remain a challenge. And what we continuously engage in is looking at ways where we can actually create that balance without compromising the core mandate of conservation. And that is why these issues of how can we make sure that we have more activities in a particular park without really making or compromising that sense of place of what people think the park is. They always have contention. And you will recall all the issues about if we say we're going to have a lodge, people start asking questions, you know, why do you commercialize? Are you making a park? Something like that. So those are the challenges that we are continuously have to deal with. The other issue I wanted to respond to was the grievance system. I'm responding to that, not as an HR person, but as a person who is an implementer of HR policies. That yes, we are a public entity, and obviously we do have policies and also a session that dealt with the grievance processes within the organization. You will recall that there was even a strike that came out in Kruger with regard to the Field Rangers at the beginning of the year, and we dealt with it. We are happy to actually pronounce that we have agreed, we have got into an agreement with the NEHAU, which was the organization that was running around that, and there is an agreement even with the other union. So we do have a sitting, and we continuously engage with the colleagues in issues of conflict. Because for us, what is important, as you know, in our strategy, people are familiar with what is called the balance scorecard. We take the human aspect of it as the driver of our strategy. So I want to just really highlight on that. The living conditions that we alluded to in Kruger, it's not a new issue that I think has been raised throughout the past. And over the years, what has happened was that we even got some funding from government to actually address those issues. So we are attending to that, and obviously we have to attend them incrementally over the years. If you go to the other parks, for instance, you will find, if you go to Golden Gate National Park, you will see that we have even transformed those housing that way. Then you go to the other parks in Rustenburg as well, we have changed the aspect of house and all those things. So it's something that we think. We talk about criminal activities as well, and I think we do really have the statistics that is related to that. And criminal activities are not only related to staff, but even things that are happening throughout, in parts that are of criminal offences. We work very, very closely with our law enforcers, ACPS, and military services, wherever it's necessary. Thank you.
I mentioned the entry fee for vaporism, and I specifically spoke about the Cape Point initiative, where there seems to be a massive increase in that type of entry. Have you got any figures that you can that can show, in not in general revenue terms, but in terms of entry gate fees, what has happened over the last 5 or 6 years? I think it would be important that you saw that we can quell any questions that are brought to our desk, because it's causing a lot of strife in the tourist industry, and particularly with couriers who are no longer happy to take people into these parks on a day trip basis where they go in and go out because of the cost associated with the per capita versus the personal cost. So if you can give me that answer, I'd like to know.
Yeah, you said that your pricing is inflation related. So the question is whether what Grant said, Mr. Farrell is saying, is true, and then if it is true, how do you explain the relationship between inflation and the type of price increases that you are having at the Cape Point?
So I think there are two issues at Cape Point. Firstly, due to the fact that there's a heads agreement with the city for telling out the National Park, that was something that was agreed between the National Park over the running of those parks, is that we have not implemented the dual pricing system at Table Mountain at this point. There's only one price. So that is what we're trying to get right now. And one of the key challenges for that right now is that there's no connectivity at Cape Point Gate. There's no telephone connectivity, no cell phone connection at Cape Point Gate at this point. The cables have just been laid now onto the main road, and we're now busy trying to see connect cables, because then the computer system that's there can help us identify in advance from the two operators, who's local and who's international. So right, we're going forward is we want to implement the dual pricing system, which will make it cheaper for domestic markets. The two operators will have a tour operator wild card part of our program there, that they will preload for the tour guide the confirmation fees for the foreign visitors on their card. When he gets to the gate, he will just swipe the number of tourists on the bus and swipe that card and download the review for that sort of part of that visit. But Cape Point itself is one of our high volume parks, so we've got to manage very carefully how the access with, of course, queues at the gate during busy times, and that's one of our key challenges. And the lack of communication infrastructure is one of our key challenges, which we're working on. In terms of the pricing, I'm happy to supply a historic view of the pricing at Cape Point to the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Honourable Pengu.
There's not very much. Thanks to the presenter. Listening to where they come from, where they are today, 1 o'clock,
But still, I agree that it's still a great challenge. One question that I was really asking to them, say, coming up with your radical project plan, I mean, this is the development plan that Trevor has come up with it. Have you ever thought of that, whether you're going to invite views and opinions and input from other stakeholders and audience from Africa to begin to build up on that? I'm saying this because Americans want to be, not just provide work for them, but they want to be part of it. I hear you loud and clear when you say people living adjacent to the various parks, you intend to do some real benefits. Real benefits. I'm trying to think of them. The question of providing them wood or are they going to be important? The question of the workers that are within that are complaining. Are we training them? Are we causing them to be part of the program, they being part of the service? Because the question of ownership is the one that drives the people to then begin to then say, it is our love. Now, further to that, the thing is, I can't imagine myself going to the people that cannot afford 24,000. Just a comment. Thanks.
Respond, you say the Gita to me is a C and pass, F-A-T.
Just in terms of the stakeholder, we'll ask him really to handle it. She's responsible for park planning and strategy around park planning as well. But just to let you know, as part of the legal process of park management plan, we have to engage through stakeholder support for each park. So any development or any plan that we put in place for a park, it will be a workshop, formal workshop with stakeholders around that community to help guide direction of the park. And I agree 100% with the committee members. We, to get true buy-in from communities, you have to have, people have to have an input and feel part of the decision. It can't be, we listen at this meeting and walk away and do whatever we want to do. And this is what is being driven at the moment through the meeting. Park management plan. We also come from a history where the National Park was subject to 2/3 of the land claim. That was not awarded to the community in terms of the physical land, and it's still going to be protected. If we do not show real benefits, and I mean whether it's jobs, business opportunities in terms of community lodges and peripheral park, incorporating community land, watering the park into the park, and creating access to market. All those private lodges that are run by communities and owned by communities, we will have land claims on the agenda in the future. And hence, this is one of our key focus areas. So, an issue like now, for example, the Mkambeni Lodge, which is near the Numbi Gate of the National Park, there was a third party who got involved there, took the money and ran, left the community with a lodge with no money. We are currently investigating taking over the lodge, helping them operate, putting them on our reservation system, but they will be the beneficiaries of that location. We have a similar one at Matawani in the Eastern Cape, Hello, where a third of the lodges owned by the community, a third funded by a bank, and a third by Sandbox. We help them from this. And the same with the Stand in the Mere concession with the end of Kalakari, where we help operate with a concession partner ourselves. We make sure the community is protected through our community PPP process, so we help protect them through that process, but they get a third one to operate on their behalf, but they generate good revenue from that. So try to put in more of those projects right around our park.
Okay, I just
want
to add to the stakeholder engagement
that
you of our operations. As you will know, that when we actually construct this strategy, this is a 5-year or 10-year process where you can see it as an event. But as Glenn has highlighted, is that our legislation has compelled us to actually have what we call park forums. Park forums have been representative of stakeholders, including municipalities, NGOs, people that we don't want to talk to, and other people. process here, but everybody else to be part of that process, and we're engaged around issues, the ongoing operations in terms of implementing. And all the time, people would actually have the opportunity to engage with us. There's a mining development operating in the park, people around the park, people are going to ask those kind of questions. So we do engage with us. I think I also want to highlight that SANParks, as from last year, we were talking about the levy, for instance, we're talking about, has initiated the process of accrediting 1% levy from
from our actual revenue.
And we are going to be doing actually what we call corporate social investment programs, where we engage the people in terms of the real benefits. What is it that you would like us to do? And in particular, where we can actually make a high impact in terms of socioeconomic benefits for the park. So we do really engage there.
To the 1% levy that we are taking out of our revenue, is we decided instead of putting the tourism levy in, which the North tourism industry, which goes towards marketing the country and doing that tourism, we said there's more important for us to use that 1% for communities, and hence we opted for that, and that's what the 1% will go towards that project.
Thank you very much. I hope my apologies for being late was communicated to the committee. Thank you very much. I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry to have missed the presentation, but I can see from the way the question has been answered, it must have been a very vibrant one. The question I see for the document I have here, the presentation, talking about Lake overnight visitors and the percentage 0.6%. Is this referring to black people visiting the same park?
Yes.
Thank you very much. You see, when you look at it alone, 8.6, it looks like it's very small. But I would have appreciated myself, this is a comparison, let's say, from some of the other research groups, so that you can then be able to tell whether the black people need to mobilize more to spend the night in the park, to use the park and so on, because we've been talking about a lot in this committee about the promotion of domestic policy. And we know that the black people are in the majority in this country, and we know that they travel a lot in 2000, are not necessarily chosen. And therefore, if, for instance, we had a conversation, if you're able to tell whether they are doing the least or they are doing better, I thought I would appreciate it. In which case, then I can see where my own role comes in, encourage them or use them to be. Now, second, the total to help is that there is a big plan for the next 10 years to 2022. My obvious question would be, why not 2020? In line with the Mr. Salamander's plan. The other thing I wanted to find out, actually the main one, is about which is on the nature conservation. I don't know if we talk about animals, but the answer I've been listening to are all about maybe administration and so on and so forth. I just want to talk about animals. Can I delay coming? Because I want to find out, why does it seem that the Save Rhino campaign is now a little bit silent? There was a time when it was up, and I think this committee, for one thing, supports that campaign. It actually went further, and we are not only supporting it in the country, we actually raised it when we overdue in Mexico. When we learned that sometimes there are international issues among the various countries, and South Africa was counted by Mexico, and one of those countries, I don't know the structure, but are able to communicate with the other countries, with South Africa. And we often raised to our chairperson. We actually lead it with a message when they do have that need. We actually support, you know, the safe, the rising campaign. But looking around, this is a group who are no longer as vocal as we were, you know, in the month of, I think, March, April, and so on. And the other thing, in connection with the rhino, we all know that after the call, and I wanted to find out whether we can actually work out how much we are losing in terms of, you know, the destruction of the animals. Because I would say, apart from the number of rhinos decreasing, and therefore fewer calls being able to see the rhino alive, but also I would want to believe that people are who benefit from the horn. Say, for instance, some rhinos are of old age and they die. What do you do with those horns? Because you can work out how much you are actually losing. And probably how much we have been increased from the allowing this campaign to destroy the animals.
Before you respond, just as if you could briefly inform us about your relationships with the Department of Tourism and the SA Tourism, your relationships, and how do you sort of promote synergies between the two, because really Kruger National Park is an important heritage site and base.
The one for the levy, you've taken it away from tourism. And the chairperson Drayden is the court on a lot of the end value, because who does your answer to more marketing then? Is it done in house now and not for tourism only? Because you know, one would need to know that relationship.
Can we get a question?
Linked to that, but you have yeah. MOUs signed with your counterparts, for example, Mozambique. You have any MOUs, okay? What are the challenges in respect of those MOUs that you have signed with your specific companies, institutes in the neighborhood? Because we share a lot of parks, right? Where are the challenges there? Could you identify some of them? Thanks.
I think it will not be called if we look at challenges.
Question around the black preservation. Essentially what we've done is, it is not controversial. People asked us why we haven't collected statistics in East Africa. But we need to know for our pastoring. So what we do is we basically take the neighbor legislation of half sustainable. Anybody who's not white is in the black. Mm-hmm. We don't break it down to the racial thing, it's black and black. And there's really a view of the gate officials on duty. We don't apply the cable test. So, basically that view at this point in time, trying to make, I want to compare it to accurate, so that the best thing at this point in time. If I just to let you know, our highest point in terms of black visitor numbers, now this is a percentage of the total domestic visitors. So we take out international visitors from it because it's not related to that, the challenge of international visitors. The best was in 2009-10, we had 31.5% of the day visitors, total visitors, were black visitors. It then started dropping off to 31.3 in 2010-11, down to 29.7, which we show now. We believe it's because there were two key issues around that. The one was the recession, so people who were traveling started cutting the back of travel. Secondly, in Kruger, because of the amount of complaints and misbehavior, the non-alcohol policy was implemented. A lot of people who came in just party stopped coming for a picnic because they're not alcohol in public areas. Mm. So we think that affects the greatest issue, so we're doing research currently to understand that properly, see what that issue is. Nevertheless, we need to create
recreational areas for visitors who want to come to a park. On the periphery of the park, you just want to come and have a picnic.
Okay.
In a wildlife environment, but not necessarily want to come and have a birding experience.
Okay.
You've got to look at different opportunities around that in terms of our plans as well. More products for that type of requirement. In terms of the overnight visitors, however, this last financial year, 8.6% are overnight visitors. That is the highest ever.
Yeah.
So the conversion from day visitors to overnight visitors is slowly happening.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, Golden Gate Hotel, which we took back from a concession for the poor performance and refurbished it ourselves and put it back in, we took it out to refurbish it. Black visitors to Golden Gate National Park dropped below 10%. Currently 14% since we opened it. So the product is leaning more towards a black visitor who wants to come for a conference or a corporate event, stay in the hotel, have their first experience in a park, then may decide to come back. Because there's an experience for the first time. Where the visitor park may not have been top of mind historically. They had a first experience with government or corporate paid for them to own a conference. So that's what we're working on. But Golden Gate is a prime example of what can happen if we change the facility to suit a new market.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're focusing on. But we are seeing from in 2005-06 it was 6% and it grew up to 8.6% now overnight visitors. Slow growth, but the trajectory is quite positive. That's where we are in terms of the ratio there. In terms of the plan, it's basically a 10-year plan because our park management plans change on 5-year cycles. So to try and keep in the cycle of a 5-year park management plan, that's why we do 10-year strategies. In terms of the Rhinos, I mentioned earlier that I can assume it's hot on the agenda. The communication has been taken away from the same park and placed at the minister's office. The communication is coming out of the government office now. We have that block still coordinating all the data, but the communication is coming from the minister's office to make sure the coordination is correct. So that may be why we're quite at the moment. However, in terms of the support, we recently got a check from the United Gate Poaching Campaign of 5 million rand, just recently, for the fight against poaching. And that was a corporate a government initiative through the Audi Ranger Corps to raise money for anti-poaching. So it is not on the agenda. Rhino horn currently is more valuable in gold. And the key challenge faced is that if I'm living next to the park and I don't have a job and I can't feed my family, there are hundreds of people that are willing to put their lives on the line to run poach rhino. If I know that one poaching incident is my salary for a year. So it's a major challenge. So the economic situation around the park is a key challenge as well, not that is driving the situation. So there's a national project on this. As I mentioned earlier, that Mabuso and someone, the previous CEO of Sand Park, is leading a team now to consider the issues around trade and anti-trade to try and consider that view, because it's really around that at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And if you close one market, you open another one. And then leading other areas want to open up myself. And that's what we are now understanding. That's the focus around that. In terms of if a rhino dies of natural causes or through any other incident we're aware of, it goes into a stockpile that we have under the very high security area, and there's huge value there, which we believe in the long term should possibly be planned back into conservation, like the elephant tusks were done before they were traded as well. In terms of the relationship with Department of Tourism and Ecotourism, a bit of a difficult one because we sort of stand the leg in two different departments.
Yeah.
So I attend the tourism, I attend all the next and the midway meetings, my marketing colleague led the mid-tech meeting on the marketing portfolio. We have direct meetings with Ecotourism in terms of their strategy. But Ecotourism has never marketed Sand Park ever. We've always marketed up internationally ourselves. We never applied the 1% tourism levy historically. But we felt at the time we were to be part of the industry, and we thought at that point, why would we give 1% to a government assisted department where we could actually deal with another issue? The crowd said it's already putting significant money into that already. And we felt that it was better by assisted levy to community issues than into the marketing of our products that we do anyway part of our budget. So we haven't taken anything away from international marketing at all.
And then in terms of MOUs, if you could respond to that.
The MOUs that we're referred to in our context, they are in the form of the transfrontier conservation areas that you have. The challenges, opportunities are actually contextual, depending on what stage the agreements are. You'll find that, for instance, in Rustenburg, where we have a transfrontier conservation agency with Namibia, it's working very well because the treaty has been signed and there's the funding that is in place, and you'll find that there is actually collaboration that is happening in terms of implementation of their strategy. Similar to what we have, for instance, in the Drakensberg Malodian, where we have Lesotho, South African National Park, even with the Provincial Conservation Agency. That one is working very well because it was signed about 5 years ago and we are implementing a strategy, and all the countries are actually contributing towards the cost of the operation. In places like, for instance, Zimbabwe, where we are still at the initial stage, and where we have like kind of free access, when I say free access from Zimbabwe to South Africa, we have all challenges. One, not only of the political agenda of the countries in terms of conservation in Zimbabwe, for instance, we have the cattle roaming around there that actually cross the Limpopo River when there are issues. In Botswana, the adjacent neighbors are private landowners who really are actually about money, and in South Africa, we have a public entity like South African National Park, and the discussions they revolve around, if there are things that have to happen, we think South Africa is really going to cost us, you know, the money in terms of those kind of things. So we are dealing with those issues, but the treaty hasn't been signed at this point in time. So there are challenges, but I think in a broader scale, there are opportunities because then you get to work together, in particular the guys on the ground, to deal with issues, whether they are law enforcement or income generating. I think that's one of the issues that is a potential resistance in time. I know that, for instance, in Kruger, there was an issue in Mozambique, was expecting that they had to actually get, we get 50% of the money that we generate from Kruger. And with the costs associated with management, they come back from South Africa. Those are the kind of negotiations that do happen at a high level, which get addressed by the different ministries as well. I mean, the issues of poaching that we're talking about, animals don't know boundaries. Those are the things that we have to talk about, to actually be dealing with on the ground. But when there are issues, we really escalate them for intervention.
Unfortunately, we have a limited amount of time, and we've got to adjourn as soon as possible. But I think we have looked at the national agenda on the role on accelerated economic growth, creating jobs, and sustainable livelihoods. And then when we talked about the price movement of us, we're looking at that. And then looking at rural development, you say that you are working towards, or you are working with communities around the park. And then the main, one of the legs would be to develop the communities around the park. By develop, meaning that the people have got to be more dignified, because they are having income, generating income, they know what is happening, they participate around the parks, and then therefore they can assist in poaching. But we have not reached that stage, but we are aware that that is the way to go. And I think that does not only need sandbox, it needs all of us to stem the tide, I think, for rhino poaching. Not only the criminal aspect, but it is also the social aspects. The issue of training rangers and supporting schools, we have been mentioned, and we would like to see even more of that, because it
in the long run it is going to assist in rural development, and rural development is going to assist in our fight at rhino poaching and other poaching as well. The issue of the safety and security and also that increase, I hope that that has been satisfied to your aspects and the role of the FAMDF in the in the assistance. And the game rangers sometimes hear that they also are part of pushing together with some vets and some people, which makes it quite a formidable challenge to game reserves, because they also have GPS to identify spots where they are and where soldiers are. And because for an ordinary person, you just get lost. But if now you have been trained in navigation, then you know where you are and where you are supposed to escape and so forth. So we wish you well. We recognize the efforts that you are doing, but we still have concerns that have to be addressed, and concerns are everywhere. And it is our duty to raise issues that are of concern to the public, and we shall continue to raise those issues as the public sees it, because that is the duty of Parliament. It has got to do oversight, and so we've got to do oversight to the satisfaction of the nation. We have not reached there yet, but we are realizing that we've got to do that oversight irrespective of which party we belong to. So from whether you have you want to have the last say, and then we conclude. But we wish you all the best, but we shall always vigilantly be looking at all the institutions and then call them to Parliament when we think an issue to be addressed. If you have want to say the last step before we close.
Chair and Committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity for us to present you. We more than welcome, more than happy to welcome any visitor of HOC if you want to look at a specific issue. If there is concern on the issues, we're very happy to entertain you at our offices once we come down here so we can discuss the actual issue that has been raised. So we're happy to do that. Thank you again.
Yeah, we are doing intro the feed for our customers.
I heard on the news this morning there's actually a report that's come out relating to the supply and demand chain of the Vietnamese issue, particularly with rhino horn. It would be very interesting to, I just heard glimpses of it on the radio this morning, but they've got to a point now where they can determine what is going out of the country and what the demand is and how they can try and control it. Have you heard anything? Have you seen that?
Let us get a written report of that, it will be of interest. But let us close on the note that South Africa is our motherland, and we have to protect it, or to advance it, its interests, and we have to love it. Thank you. We've got to see outside, and then we can see before we go to the meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.